Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
All right, welcome back. I know we kind of just dived into the Madison veto of the bonus bill, and I really rushed it out at the end of last segment, and I didn't really give you a good heads up on why we're doing this. And so we will get into all of that as soon as we get into the content. But first, let me just take care of this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And the obvious, because, and I'll get into why I say this is the obvious, because people are starting to, how do you know when people are listening to what you're saying? Because all of a sudden you start seeing articles pop up out of the blue, or people talking about something that you've been railing about for a long time, which is good. It's not about owner, you know, nobody has the copyrights to the Constitution. There are copyrights to Republic Review, and there's reasons why people will not jump into and support it, because they're all about trying to make money. And we don't make any money here. The intent is to be, the intent is that we don't want people to buy. So the reason I put a copyright, just so you understand, the reason why I wrote the books and put a copyright on Republic Review was for one very specific reason. We didn't want somebody to come along with who had lots of money, whether that be a conservative entertainer like Glenn Beck, or whether that be, you know, Soros or some evil, nefarious person that says, oh, well, we're going to do really good things, but you have to give us the rights to this so that then they could bury it. That's what's happened to, as everybody has heard, that's exactly what's happened to engines that run, you know, will drive a car hundreds of miles on a gallon of gas or what have you. They're are all sorts of people that want, and they're making a lot of money off of this problem. People think, let me get into that. We're going to also get into marketing, but the reason why we're going through these vetoes at this current state is because we are coming up on the Constitution Day. And so it's really important that I go through this, these very specific messages, so that you understand that the Constitution must have the power enumerated in it for the federal government to be able to exercise this. This is really important because this is also being missed by these, you know, I think there's somebody that calls these guys backbenchers or what have you, but the fact of the matter is that whether we are conservative entertainers, whether we are people that are really concerned, I just think that most people just want to be able to get their point in time in the limelight. They just want to be able to have their 15 seconds of fame, or they want more than that. There's many people that are just driven for the money. And I can show you that if you start looking at a conservative entertainer that may have a daily podcast or may have a show like this, and they're constantly selling you their wares, you know, it's all in here, instead of telling you what you need to do, instead of educating you and then, you know, hopefully motivating you and getting you engaged. You know, there's academies out there. There's these courses you can buy and take so you can learn. oh, those are just great, aren't they? Well, you've spent a lot of money and you're no closer to really solving the problem. They don't want you to have the problem. They want you to continually buy their crap. They want you to continually consume what they have to sell you. Why? Because that's how they're putting bread on their table. Now, nobody can begrudge. I mean, a long time ago, I was having a conversation with Douglas Gibbs, and I told him that I looked at all of these conservative entertainers as these, you know, fake prophets, or like the evangelical faith movement, where people were more concerned about putting money in their pocket than they were about really saving lives or what the end solution was and why they were why they even got into doing this, because people need a solution. And when people don't have a solution, they get desperate. When the times are desperate and people, you know, get convinced, oh, well, we'll do this. The problem is that when you've done something and when you're looking specifically at, you know, what we're dealing with, unconstitutional government and so forth, well, they may understand, but they don't know what to do about it. Well, that's great that they understand, and you can sell them more stuff. What we need to do is we need to unemploy a lot of people that have no business doing what they're doing in government. I know that that's going to be, you know, a bad thing, that people aren't going to have a retirement anymore. People aren't going to have these perks and benefits of working for the government. But we have to unemploy those people who have no business doing those jobs. So anyway, let me get into some of the stuff that we want to get into. We want to get into more of the solutions, but what we've got, and to be honest with you, what we have coming up is Constitution Day. And so with Constitution Day, you know, that as we read the Constitution, we're going to be reading those very specific articles, or I should say the powers within the articles, and you're going to notice that there are certain things that don't exist. Well, so this is why these vetoes and this presidential, and I'll call it precedence, even though there is no such thing as precedence within the Constitution. In other words, if a court makes a ruling, precedence is longstanding. And the federal government provided longstanding when we had three presidents veto attempts by Congress to make the Department of Transportation. So what happens? Well, now that we've got these three presidents that have vetoed and said you had to amend the Constitution to create that power, this provides the academic evidence based on what powers are in the Constitution and what the federal government can be doing. So this is why when we read the Constitution, you should actually start picking up on the fact that there's no Department of Energy, there's no Department of Education. You know, I just ask that when we read these things and we go through all of this heading into Constitution Day and we read the Constitution, you tell me what you think. But let me dive into two very specific articles that have been brought to my attention. Now, I've been railing on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment for a long time. And as a matter of fact, last year, I wrote an article in defense of a state legislature, Matt Shea, who was being label lynched by the local sheriff, who's a Republican, but he's a Republican in name only. And as a matter of fact, he is a hardcore progressive, Sheriff Ozzie Knezovich. Anyway, I wrote this multi-page article and I actually sent it out and I got into the details of the 14th Amendment and how Section 3 that both Ozzie and I sent this to Matt and it was 40 some pages and I don't think he actually read it, but I provided it to a few different people to say, okay, here you go. If you want an academic article that lays out how Matt Shea is the consummate of a patriot. He's no longer in office. He basically surrendered. He gave up his office because he didn't want to fight. And I think, you know, had he read that 40-some-odd page article, I know it takes time. Are we that lazy that we just can't read something and go through? Because I laid out the entire argument, what a patriot was, what is treason, what is defying the Constitution, and what is the obligation of supporting the Constitution when it comes to a politician who's taken that oath. I mean, I think I laid out an ironclad case that Matt Shea was the consummate legislator and public servant, and and how the 14th Amendment really points to people like Ozzie and these other people that are failing, fellow legislators who actually, you know, tried to subvert Matt Shea in the last legislative session. Well, interestingly enough, it just kind of fell on deaf ears. Well, I've been railing on Section 3 for quite a while, over a year, and have been pointing out as I've done all the research, and then I wrote this article at the beginning of the year, after I wrote the article for Matt Shea, that just, you know, it's out on the website regarding the unknown teeth in the Constitution, so I could put all the academic citations out there for you. Well, so interestingly enough, there have been a few articles and a few people that have just come out lately, apparently, you know, I have to thank you for helping people get the message out that we actually do have the solutions. Well, so there's a guy by the name of, and I don't know who he is, Mike Adams. And Mike Adams has just written an article regarding how Trump has this secret weapon and so forth. It's called the Constitution. Well, that's great. And I appreciate the fact that people are noticing, but let's get into the real facts of what these things do and what they don't do as soon as we come back, and then we'll get into the veto. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. And so let me point out the lack of full vision, because what happens is people look at this opportunity with Section 3 and they say, oh, this is it. This is all we need to do. It kind of reminds me of the Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian, how people were so fanatical and they and certain things occurred while Brian was trying to just get the people to, you know, do things for themselves. And so, you know, the crowd was just so fanatical. He ended up running away. He threw away a gourd, and as he ran away, one of his slippers fell off. And so people grabbed these few things that, he left behind. And one person said, "We got to follow the gourd." And then another person, "No, we got to follow the shoe." And they came up with these reasons why we had to go down these paths instead of and if you don't understand the life of Brian, it's a comical view of the times and the fanaticisms of Christ in today's views of the fanaticism of these religious groups and so forth. And I'll tell you what, Monty Python holds, you know, they hold no bar, you know, as regarding going after and making fun of anybody. They were kind of like the South Park in a very clean version and in a very intellectual way. But anyway, the point is that when people start hearing, "Oh, wow, this is a game changer," they're really missing even the bigger picture, because the game changer is not the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It is a tool, like I'm telling you. It is a tool just like the First Amendment petitions, just like the common law grand juries. These are all different tools that we have to start using to start pushing ourselves towards the ultimate goal, which is getting the federal government and the state government and local governments back into the framework and back onto the roads that they needed to be on, that the framers, and in all honesty, as smart as these men were, they didn't see the vision and they didn't understand what they were really engaging in. There's no doubt in my mind, had they saw the bigger picture, they probably would have written down, you know, things, the really important messages, and put them in glass tubes and says, "Break glass in case of emergency like today, what to do." And there's no doubt in my mind that they would have probably done that. They didn't imagine how evil life would become here in America. They just couldn't fathom it. As a matter of fact, during the ratification debates, I believe it was the governor of North Carolina that said, "There's no way a Mohammedan like Obama would ever come to office. There's just no way. I mean, America would have to lose its heart and lose its love for Christ." And look, I mean, these guys, he said it's possible, but they couldn't fathom this. And so that was one of the reasons why people understood that what they had, what they were given in this Constitution was just that great. Well, anyway, there are these two articles. Mike Adams wrote an article and, quote, "It's Trump's, quote, secret weapon revealed. 14th Amendment allows the president to strip electoral college votes from states supporting censorship against voters, enables mass arrests of mayors, governors, and judges who support the BLM." I mean, he's really missing one, Section 3, that part. And he's also missing, I think he does include Section 3, but here's a person that's now pointing to the 14th Amendment. Well, I applaud Mike Adams for finding that, and I applaud whoever got him on that track, because the 14th Amendment is a great fulcrum in cleaning up our government, but it only goes so far. It does not dismantle all of the unconstitutional powers that exist. What it does is it actually creates the problem, or I should say, it sets up the problem to be reviewed. This is what I tell people. When we start talking about the 14th Amendment, when I was talking to the NLA, John Durash, when I was talking to Bob Schultz, when we start going down this path of exercising Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, it creates the scenario that all of a sudden begs the question, what else is the federal government doing that's unconstitutional? What are these politicians doing that is unconstitutional. It begs the audit to identify everything that is unconstitutional and to force this out into the light of day. Now, the other article that was sent to me by another person that is a constitutional, you know, a true patriot and a person that, you know, I think is pretty well read. I mean, he is one of the more knowledgeable persons. He's a sovereign citizen. He's gone through that type of course, and he's basically checked out of being a real person. And interestingly enough, he's a sovereign citizen, but he votes. Anyway, because that's kind of antithetical to a sovereign citizen. There's this other thing called the Still Report. And apparently the Still Report is this guy that does these videos on YouTube and has sponsors that actually support him. And that's great. And he talks about how the quote, the message of the day is how the 14th Amendment could save the nation. And so the Still Report, you know, when they look at this, everybody, it's like the gourd or it's like the shoe. Oh, this is it. This is what, you know, this is what we, this leads us to salvation. No. No, the entire Constitution and the auditing of it and understanding it is the process that will actually fix all of our problems. And so it's nice and it's flattering that people are now sending me, you know, these other people that are coming up with these assertions of, yeah, this is it. Folks, I have to basically tip my hat off to you because apparently you're getting the message out, but we are not anywhere close to where we need to be because, I mean, if it's taking a half year, actually almost three quarters of a year, or actually well over a year when I started talking about this stuff, and getting that message actually to fruition with shows and articles and these types of things, we're not there yet. We really need to start pushing this message out faster and wider. So this is a great segue into pleading for you to actually expand our listenership. That way, more and more people can start poking these entertainers in the eye. Well, what about this? What about? And then when these guys actually go and do the discovery, as a matter of fact, you know, most conservatives, the fact of the matter is most conservatives look at the 14th Amendment as an abomination. They do not see the divine hand of providence and how it was passed and the history of it as something that was a godsend to this nation for these days. There's no doubt in my mind from Section 1 in defining citizenship as well as defining the protections that the states must guarantee that are within the Constitution. Now, those were the Bill of Rights that was applied to the states. And I actually have gone through this before, that the Bill of Rights, there's only two parts of the Bill of Rights that isn't applied to the states, which is freedom of the press and the establishment of religion. Those are organizational. The states cannot violate individual privileges and immunities, but not they can actually have their oversight and they can institutionalize, if they want to, a religion. Now, that would be the stupidest thing, and I've gotten into this with many, many people in conversations, that today, and we're going to, this is actually a part of some of my books, or I'm actually going to try to condense this all into a single book, where the solution for state governments, as we unpeel these unconstitutional powers, or we dismantle these unconstitutional powers from the federal government, what the states really need to do is the states need to actually start empowering religious organizations to take over compassionate services. Government has no business doing that. And compassionate services will have a much greater success than a secular approach of just throwing money out to people who are gaming the system and so forth. Only a pastor will really understand what needs to be done and how they can really help change a life from somebody that has been living off of, you know, government subsidies and, you know, welfare, those types of things. So anyway, as flattered as I am, and if you see these things, you know, you can by all means give me more. but I have started to notice this, and I guess, like I said, my hat's off to you, because now you can understand, you know, that this message is getting out because of you. So with that, we're going into break in just about a half a minute. So when we come back, we're not going to cover Constitution Day. I hope you have plans. Let me know if you've got anything great planned. But like I said, I believe everybody is going to hide this Constitution Day, because how dare they, you know, support such a bad, evil, you know, racist, you know, form of government and all this other crap. And by the way, I'm working on a meme to actually prove or identify every single corporation out there. I mean, there's just so many, I can't do it all, but I'm trying to show you just how vast this the bamboozling of businesses in supporting Black Lives Matter and the rest of this. So when we come back, we'll try to finish where I left off with the Madison's bonus bill, and we'll get into more of this stuff right after these two promos.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so I apologize for digressing down these little facts or these little points of information regarding, you know, people actually picking up on my messages of some really great tools out there. But don't be fooled. These are not the end. These will not undo the EPA, the education, and all of these things that are unconstitutional. These are the things, the social engineering, those are the things that they're destroying our constitutional republic with by teaching these kids, indoctrinating these kids into communism. So again, the end game isn't putting and getting rid of the communists in office. That's just a big part of the problem. The end game is full compliance to the Constitution and one's oath of office and so forth. And the only way to do that is going through the full purging process. It's kind of like, you know, a sinner going through the full process of repentance and making right and making restitution and fixing and resolving all the problems that they caused. So anyway, When we left off yesterday, I had just kind of finished. I apologize for this going so long that we couldn't really get into the the details of what really Madison provided you here. We kind of just really went through this very fast. But I want to point out that Madison actually mentioned the necessary and proper clause. He actually mentioned the power to regulate commerce among the several states. See, a lot of people think that the Commerce Clause gives the federal government a lot of latitude. And right here, Madison's saying the power to regulate commerce among the several states cannot include a power to construct roads and canals and improve the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and secure such commerce without a latitude of construction departing from the ordinary import of the certain person. And he's talking about the Constitution and how we are interpreting it. You can't interpret the federal government with the power to regulate. The power to regulate is just basically saying if there's a problem amongst the states, the federal government is to come in and intervene and say, look, California, you cannot dictate emission standards. If you want to have an emission standard for the state of California, you got to build those cars yourself. Because the cars coming out of Michigan are designed to sell, and we do not have the ability or an enumerated power to dictate, you've never given us this power to dictate environmental standards, therefore you don't have the constitutional standing to force other states and companies to produce to your legal standards in production. So, it does open the door in closing some of these tired arguments regarding the, you know, these constitutional powers and so forth. So anyway, what we wanted to also do is we wanted to point out that the Common Defense and General Welfare Clause was also actually put out there. And Madison mentions this twice. And he also mentions the Supremacy Clause. And so these four, what I call the mystical clauses, these four clauses were basically shut down regarding the ability for the federal government to be able to involve itself in any power it didn't have. That these clauses only pertained to the enumerated powers, that those powers are supreme, that those powers that have been delegated, those are the supreme law of the land, that the Necessary and Proper Clause only applies to the those enumerated powers, the Commerce Clause, and as well as the the Necessary and Proper Clause actually pertains to those powers that they can do only those things necessary and proper to carry out those foregoing powers. And the Common Defense and General Welfare case, those are just, it's just a preamble that is kind of saying that, you know, we're going to do these things in, you know, because we want to promote and provide for the Common Defense and General Welfare. And in doing so, we're going to empower the federal government with these very specific powers. The General Welfare and Defense is just a noble little comment or a noble little clause that is placed into the preamble of the actual powers being delegated. And that is how the federal government is supposed to be functioning. They can't use these clauses to, you know, to create portals and, you know, to open up the Constitution to us, you know, to usurp powers that they don't have. They can't do it. Anyway, in Monroe's, and so I like Monroe's a little bit better, even though, you know, Madison did this so succinctly. He actually wrote his, you know, his veto message in less words than Monroe did. But it was a little bit difficult to follow. But anyway, nevertheless, let's get the macro view again. Again, in 1817, when Madison was leaving office, and as a matter of fact, it was Madison who suggested that the highways have, you know, that the nation had the ability to improve the highways and waterways. And boy, Congress looked at that and goes, wow, this is a great idea. We need to actually usurp these powers. So they went off and created a bill that Madison actually, in one hand, he asked for, but in the other hand, he vetoed it and said, we don't have these powers. You have to amend the Constitution. And I think that's the whole thing that was completely missed by Congress. And they said, we don't need to do this. We're going to be able to do whatever we feel necessary. Anyway, in 1822, and sadly, this is after Monroe already passed what was called the Missouri Compromise, which was a huge violation of the Constitution. And then Monroe got this right. You know, he got that wrong and he got this right. And so it just goes to show that these men did not really understand the Constitution. I would say that they didn't understand it as well as Madison, and even Madison didn't understand some of the applications that were within the Constitution, such as the whole concept of the militia and why we the people were the ones that were going to have to enforce the Constitution. That no other entity could do that. And so some of these things, I think, you know, these guys understood, they had their arms around it, but they didn't understand the magnitude of its importance in these days, as that we had drifted so far away from the paradigm of being a good, righteous people to becoming this godless, secular nation that we've become. There's no doubt in my mind, if you go to these cemeteries where these men, you'd probably, if you put a stethoscope on the ground, you could probably hear them just churning at light speed, just flipping over in their graves, just going crazy on how lost we are and how they know that, you know, we have a system here that could actually fix all of our problems. So anyway, Congress came to, in the macro view, Congress came to James Monroe in 1822 and said, we want to create, or we want to grant ourselves this power to be able to make road improvements in the Cumberland Gap. And so actually, this is how it starts off. He says, Monroe's message to Congress vetoing their bill. And he says, having duly considered the bill entitled, quote, an act for the preservation and repair of the Cumberland Road, close quote. It is with deep regret, approving as I do the policy, that I am compelled to object its passage and to return the bill to the House of Representatives in which it originated, under a conviction that Congress do not possess the power. And I'll say that again, under a conviction that Congress do not possess the power under the Constitution to pass such a law. Boom. I mean, he could lay it right there, but he actually goes into the details. He says, a power to establish turnpikes with gates and tolls and to enforce the collection of tolls by penalties. The federal government to create turnpikes and tolls and everything else implies a power to adopt and execute a complete system of internal improvements. Ta-da! He basically just said that a power to establish these things basically lays the groundwork for a Department of Transportation. A right to impose duties to be paid by all persons passing a certain road, even through the turnpikes itself. That in passing a certain road on a horse and carriages, as is done by this bill, involves the right to take the land from the proprietor on a valuation to pass laws for the protection of the road from injuries, and if it exists as to one road, it exists to any other, and as to many roads as Congress may think proper to establish. So in other words, he's already pointing out to Congress that, hey, if we let you do this, you're going to creep this into every road out there, every highway system, every road, and you are going to become the keepers of the transportation system. That's exactly what's happened, folks. And that's why we have all of these federal dollars going into your roundabouts and federal dollars going into the road calming of your cities, where they're taking away throughfares of three-way or three lanes in each direction, two lanes, and slamming them down to one, enforcing road calming. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so the last thing I read that just proves how Monroe gets it and how these guys understood that as soon as Congress could assume they could do these things, then as he says right here, and to as many roads as Congress may think proper to establish. In other words, all of a sudden it becomes Congress's discretion because this one bill had been passed. Well, we did it here, so surely we should be able to do it there. Instead of educating people on the enumerated powers and everything that was within the ratification debates, people kind of just left the federal government and they were on autopilot for such a long time. So anyway, back into what Monroe is stating in this veto. He says, after he ends up with saying, Congress may think proper to establish, and then he goes, a right to legislate for one of these purposes is a right to legislate for the others, period. It is a complete right of jurisdiction and sovereignty for all the purposes of internal improvement, and not merely the right of applying money under the power vested in Congress to make appropriations, under which power, with the consent of the states through which this road passes, the work was originally commenced and has been so far executed. In other words, these were state roads. The roads were done by the states. The fact of the matter is here he is making a very salient point that, you know, once Congress has this green light that they can do this one thing, it opens up a floodgate of allowing them to do anything and everything without the enumerated powers. In other words, violating the Constitution. Now, even though Monroe was kind of pointing to them and saying, hey, you know, we can't do this, I wish Monroe would have actually sent this message out to the states to say, hey, states, by the way, the Congress wanted to, you know, it would have seemed like, what's a good word for it? You know, the admonishing, and or it would seem like he would be excoriating his Congress and the federal government to the states by, you know, coming to the states and saying, hey, look, they're trying to do this and they can't. And I want you to understand, you know, that these things are constantly being pushed by Congress to usurp your powers. Boy, what a great message that would have been. And what a good learning point that would have been as well for both the states and the people in the states to understand the hardcore limitations that have been placed upon Congress in the Constitution. So anyway, Monroe goes on and says, I am of opinion that Congress do not possess this power, that the states individually cannot grant it. In other words, going to the Cumberland Gap state, which I think it was Kentucky or Tennessee or Virginia at that point in time, I'm pretty sure, yeah, it was Kentucky and Tennessee as the Cumberland Gap went across West Virginia and across laterally towards the hinterland. And so what he just said is that the states individually cannot grant it. For although they may assent to the appropriation of money, just like what's going on today, your city council and or your county commissioners are allowing and assenting to federal appropriation and federal money and creating roundabouts and road calming, like I was just saying, even though they assent to the appropriation of money within their limits for such purposes, they cannot grant no power of jurisdiction or sovereignty by special compacts with the United States. This power can be granted only by an amendment to the Constitution and in the mode prescribed by it, and I'm adding here, by Article 5 of the Constitution. Folks, do you get it? Even though the states are allowing this to happen, it still is unconstitutional. We have the power to pull the rug out from underneath them. All we need are the states to actually wake up and do their doggone job and say, we never delegated you these powers. Therefore, we are shutting you down. And we explain how to do all of this. This is why Republic Review and the audit is so critical. Folks, get this message out. Don't just get the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Get the entire message out that there is a lot of things we have to do. And Section 3 and the 14th Amendment is only a small part of this. Monroe goes on and says, if the power exists, it must be either because it has been specifically granted to the United States or that it is incidental to some power that has been specifically granted. In other words, it is within those enumerated powers, not construed, not implied, but actually and directly within those powers, as he just said. It being specifically granted or it is incidental to some power that has been specifically granted, not implied. It actually has been incidental in specifically granted powers. If we examine the specific grants, and this is Monroe again, if we examine the specific grants of power, we do not find it among them, nor is it incidental to any power which has been specifically granted. Now, I'm going to be running out of time, but I want you to understand, again, the reason we're going through these vetoes is because next week we're actually going to be reading the Constitution. You're going to want to tune in because we're going to go through what powers are really enumerated. What powers does the general government? We're going to be going through the Electoral College. And I'm actually going to expand when we read the Electoral College. We're going to read the amendment, the 12th Amendment, that makes those changes. I want you to have a very crystal clear understanding of what the Constitution is and what it empowers the general government to do and do nothing more than those powers. other than those amendments that have been granted. This is why when people look at the 16th Amendment and the ability to tax us, or the 17th Amendment, they have not these things only enumerated an expansion or a very specific type of power. And so I want you to understand that these limitations that the federal government has are hard fast, and they're very well set and defined in the Constitution. So anyway, he goes on and says, it has never been contended that the power was specifically granted. It is claimed only as been incidental to some one or more of the powers which are specifically granted. The following are the powers from which it is said to be derived. So this is great, because Monroe's actually providing, you know, what they're trying to use to justify this usurpation of power of the states. And he says, first, from the right to establish roads, or to the right to establish post offices and post roads. Second, from the right to declare war. Third, to regulate commerce. Fourth, so he's already laying out these different things, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare. Fifth, from the power to make all laws necessary and proper for carrying into execution all the powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States, or in any department or officer thereof. Sixth and lastly, from the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory and property of the United States. And this is what he says after he's listed out these powers, these six powers that they were saying, oh, these things within the Constitution grant us the ability to do this. So this is Monroe's response to this. He says, according to my judgment, it cannot be derived from either of those powers, nor from all of them united, and in consequence, it does not exist. Having stated my objections to the bill, I should now cheerfully communicate at large the reasons on which they are founded, if I had time to reduce them to such form as to include them in this paper. The advanced stage of the session renders that impossible. Having at the commencement of my service in this high trust, considered it a duty to express the opinion that the United States does not possess the power in question, and to suggest for the consideration of Congress the propriety of recommending the states an amendment to the Constitution to vest the power in the United States. My attention has been often drawn to the subject since, in consequence whereof I have occasionally committed my sentiments to paper respecting it. The form which this exposition has assumed is not such as I would have given it had it been intended for Congress, nor is it concluded. Nevertheless, as it contains my views on this subject being one which I deem of very high importance and in which of the bearings has now become peculiarly urgent, I will communicate it to Congress, if my power in the course of the day, or certainly on Monday next. And so that kind of closes this. I'm going to give you a summation in our next episode regarding what, you know, why Monroe, why I believe Monroe vetoed this but allowed the Missouri Compromise to move forward. And then we'll get into Jackson's veto, and then we'll get into some marketing. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. And we need your help, as you know. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.